The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsense.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
18 days until Election Day and the fiscal negotiation merry-go-round still spinning on Capitol Hill.
Never before has a confirmation fight happened this close to a presidential election.
Holiday sales are off to a fantastic start. September retail sales were the best in recent memory, and that's with restaurants being down in that number.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
COVID is ramping up again in Europe, and that raises the fear many of the countries will resort to second shutdowns. London made a rule you cannot meet anyone outside your household, and France established a 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew. Interestingly, rents are down 31% in September for San Francisco as people flee urban areas, according to a Bloomberg article on Wednesday. Eli Lilly paused its antibiotic trial for safety reasons, and Johnson & Johnson paused its vaccine trials. Well, at the end of the week, there was some good news on that front. Pfizer may file for emergency authorization of its vaccine by the end of November. The Wall Street Journal on Thursday reported 70% of registered voters will take a vaccine, while 27% say they will not. Additionally, no more progress on a stimulus relief bill here also weighed on cyclical stocks in the stock market in general, while treasuries rallied. The House Democrats and Senate Republicans rejected the $1.8 trillion offer from the White House for different reasons, and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin later on in the week said no real progress on either side of things. The earnings season kicked off here with financials announcing good earnings overall. According to FactSet, earnings were expected to decline by 20.5% for the third quarter for the aggregate of companies in the S&P 500 index. Due to the majority of companies that report usually surprising estimates, FactSet anticipates by the end of the earnings season will likely still be down around 15% for the quarter. However, last quarter, there was a huge amount of surprises that really by a wide margin from estimates last quarter. So even FactSet's estimates based on the average where they're seeing companies typically beat, we could still be looking at a big surprise for this quarter. Many financials announcing this week. By Monday, the bank stocks were up almost 18% since September 23rd on stimulus hope and credit spreads widening versus a gain of 9.2% in the S&P 500. So a large gain in the financials. It was no surprise that when they did beat, we saw some profit taking, except for Morgan Stanley and Charles Schwab on Thursday, which both had positive reactions to their earnings. Next week will be more financials with tech industrials added to the mix. Some big names reporting next week are IBM, Netflix, Tesla. Some chip stocks on Wednesday with Xilinx and Lam Research. Transports on Thursday with airlines and rails, as well as Intel and Universal Health after the close. And then finally on Friday, Honeywell and Illinois Tools to finish things off, along with American Express. So some big bellwethers coming next week. Quite a few more banks, as well as tech and industrials. Two big retail days this week. Apple announced the iPhone 12 with 5G capabilities, while Amazon had its Prime Day. So we saw a big surge in mega cap stocks on Monday. Amazon said Prime Day 2020 marked the two biggest days ever for small and medium-sized businesses on Amazon stores. And speaking of retail, the sales numbers came out for September, up 1.9% and up 5.4% year over year. The big increase was broad-based and in discretion categories, which may indicate a sizable bounce in GDP for the third quarter. I feel technicals were really the driver in stock performance as many of their indices were extended, testing their September highs on Monday before taking a breather on Tuesday. But support came right into things again on Thursday with an intraday reversal right near some significant levels. At one point, the S&P 500 was down 1.4% on Thursday, but finished the day only down 0.2%. So a nice intraday reversal as bulls come in and retake control. The early weakness was attributed to those fears of lockdown in Europe in addition to a surge in unemployment claims. Unemployment claims were up 53,000 last week, 898,000 claims, while continuing claims do continue to decline, down 1.16 million to roughly about 10 million. Two other economic items I'd like to point out this week were the manufacturing PMIs for October, with the Philadelphia Fed index surging 32.3 from 15 last month, and the Empire State Manufacturing Survey falling slightly to 10.5 from 17 last month. And finally, let's talk about inflation. With the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, up 0.2% last month, while the annual rate was up 1.4 for core, that's without food and energy, and up 1.7% for all of it completely in the last year. There are some areas where inflation can be found, but overall, no real concerns here for the Fed and its average 2% target.
Federal government debt has basically gone from 60% of GDP in 2008 to 130% of GDP today. It's a rate of growth in government debt that's seldom been seen. And so the Fed will be facing a situation where either it helps the federal government roll over its growing amount of debt, and a growing amount of debt that you know is going to increase, because the next big step will be to move all the state and municipal debt onto the federal government balance sheet, that there'll be another big stimulus bill, which will be nothing but a disguised bailout of the various states. And as this debt moves onto the federal government balance sheet, the big question is, will the Fed roll this debt over and hereby sacrifice the dollar? Or will the Fed say to the U.S. government, sorry, bud, you're on your own, you got to fund this, and then long bond yields go to 5%? I think we both know which way this is going.
If you want to listen to this full interview, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Financial Sense Wealth Management has put together a portfolio of high dividend paying blue chips, high quality interest paying bonds, and preferred stocks. Our income account portfolio is specifically designed to help meet the needs of retirees, pension funds, and foundations looking to increase income and reduce taxes. To learn more, contact us at 888-486-3939 or email grow@financialsense.com.
The technician for the Financial Sense News Hour is chartered market technician Aaron Swinlan, who writes for DecisionPoint.com and StockCharts.com. Aaron, thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts with our listeners today.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Aaron, let's talk about and kind of kick things off with your most recent update on Wednesday, the title, Rising Trend, Not Dead Yet. An article you start off with kind of comparing the current trend of the S&P to one of your favorite Monty Python movies. I love that. Care to elaborate?
I do love Monty Python, and it just triggered me to remember of the plague, where they're out there in the town, and the guy's got his bell, and he's ringing it, and he's saying, bring out your dead, you know, and he goes forward, and so people keep throwing bodies, you know, on the wheelbarrow, and one lands on the wheelbarrow, and they say, you can hear this faint, I'm not dead yet. In fact, I'm starting to feel a little better. And of course, they whack them on the head, and that's it. So I think that's exactly what's happening today. Not dead yet, you know, that rising trend, the very steep one we had just started to form, that one broke down yesterday. But the one that started off of this most recent bottom is the one that is still intact. And I'm looking at my chart, it is absolutely still there. We haven't lost that. Let me look at my latest chart here on my computer so I can speak to this. Yeah, that trend, it looks like, is still mostly preserved right now, that rising trend. But yeah, it looks like we're popping down below it. So now it's, you know, we hit it on the head and now it's dead. So I'm not liking the action that we've had here. I talked about it in my report last night. Even though it sounded maybe kind of bullish at the beginning, I've been having problems for about a week now as far as my indicators, because everything was getting really, really overbought. And then we were starting to see some of those indicators pull back a little bit before we were starting to get this most recent decline. So, you know, I've been telling my subscribers to both the DP Alert and especially to my DP Diamond subscribers, because in there I give stock picks. So I'm always very careful to say, hey, I just want you to know I'm not getting in the market, but here still are five charts that look pretty good. You know, my goal is to help everyone read the chart and determine what at least I think is a good chart, and then they can use the analysis technique. So I have no problem throwing out picks even when things are bad. I mean, I had to throw out picks all the way through March. So that was a little difficult, but I always let my subscribers know, hey, there's issues out there. I'm trying to close out some positions, tightening up my stops, that sort of thing. And this just doesn't look good. I just think we're going to really be in for it now. I think we've had all the catalysts, especially today with the, you know, the package looking like it's not going to get past the COVID relief package. And then you've got, you know, all of these other, you know, the jobs report and the election coming up. So I feel like we just had the catalyst and now we're going to have to endure.
Yeah, that was a pretty big increase in the unemployment claims today. Obviously not a good sign. In your article, you talk about, and you mentioned just now, your indicators under the surface tell you not to be bullish. Care to elaborate on that?
Absolutely. So what I was saying is, you know, last week we were starting to see really overbought indicators. And a lot of people are familiar with, obviously, new highs, net advance declines, net advance declining volume, I mean, and the VIX, total volume. These are all the things we follow in the very short term. And while the VIX was, you know, still maintaining under its moving average with the Bollinger Bands, it was starting to fail. And generally, when you get that failure, you're going to see some volatility. Obviously, the VIX is going up. But you had those new highs. We had that big push. You know, we had all those gap ups and then the final one, right? And at that point, new highs just really popped. We had like 80 new highs at that one point. The next day, you know, we started to finally, you know, see a little bit of decline at this top, and the new highs pulled back. And then the next day they pulled back, and now they're pulling back again. Net AD was starting to, you know, they got real overbought, and then they started to fail, started to get lower and lower and lower. And all of those things were telling me there's problems in the very short term. The short term itself with our Swendlandt trading oscillators, you know, has looked, I mean, really good. It's a lot of green. We do up down pairs on our charts, and it's just a big solid green mass here since we got that bottom, you know, in September. But they really got very high. They got to the point where, you know, they were reaching these areas where normally when I see that, there's going to be a problem as soon as it starts to fail. You know, I get those very overbought readings on the Swendlandt trading oscillators. The minute they turn down, you know, they're still green, but they've turned down. And that's always a concern for me, especially when we're coming out of very overbought readings, you know, and just following the percent of stocks above their 20-day EMA in the S&P. You know, that's where, you know, yesterday it was at 3/4 of them with their price above the 20. That's still pretty good, but we had already been much higher than that. And so now we're pulling back as well. Lots of momentum is being lost. So that's the short term. I have to say though, the intermediate term at this point looks fairly good, which is surprising to me because I'm not comfortable about the intermediate term as well as the short term. But our indicators, the intermediate term ones, they're still green and they're still rising. But it's going to be the same thing with, like we saw with those short-term indicators. As soon as they turn down, it's not going to be good. And let's face it, if we get a short-term decline, we've already lost this very short-term rising trend. You know, if we continue to break down, obviously those intermediate-term indicators are going to turn, and they're overbought. So it's just this situation, and you know, I don't want to get way ahead of myself, but you know, there's always the possibility of a double top right now. In the intermediate to long term. So lots to consider, but I have to say, I sold a few positions today. I tightened up some stops even more. I feel like it's time to, you know, wait toward the more defensive areas or just the areas that are showing some strength despite everything that's going on.
Let's talk about that. You know, if you look at current leadership, it's been the typical ones. It's been technology, consumer discretionary, but we've seen an improvement in those defensive sectors you mentioned. And in fact, I think performance-wise, utilities have just done incredibly well. What's your thoughts on current leadership and sectors? Do you see a rotation here, any inflection points What areas do you like the best?
Utilities have been performing quite well. In fact, I'm just going to look at my notes here to see what has been happening in the last month. And yes, you know, in the last month, utilities have been up 6%. In that same time frame, obviously, energy and real estate have been kind of the losers. You know, one of the areas I'm finding some rotation into that I'm finding very interesting is the communication services sector. I think with, you know, the whole 5G thing, you know, there's a lot of the internet stocks. You've got Spotify, you got Netflix, you know, all of those stay at home kind of stocks, but also a little more aggressive too. And, you know, so I'm seeing some flow, if you will, into the communication services sector. I've remained very bullish on the industrials. I still like the industrials. You know, at this point, utilities leading is a little bit concerning, just because usually if you see something defensive like that become a leader during a rally, that tells you that there's some problems there. You know, if you're getting a rally off of very defensive type sectors, a lot of times that's your clue that maybe when we do get that downturn, it's going to be a big downturn, because everybody's moved into the defensive sectors, and now it's gotten bad enough, they're pulling out of those, you know, so then, you know, it works that way. And so at this point, I mean, I think there's a pretty good mix. I really like consumer discretionary. I've been a fan of industrials. And right now the one I'm watching is communication services. I think there's some good stuff going on there. And I keep an eye on energy. It is the biggest loser, as we say. But, you know, in a biggest loser sector like that, when it starts to turn, if it ever is going to start to turn, there's going to be a lot of really good bargains. So I'm keeping a close eye on energy. Of course, as far as industry goes, industry groups, solar, you know, renewable energy, I don't think I'm telling anyone surprising here. It's been, you know, moving off the charts as far as the energy sector. My portfolio is still very heavily rated, weighted in solar and renewable energy. I still like that area. I feel like it's somewhat Teflon. I don't know what you think, but, you know, I think you know, whatever way the election goes, I mean, it's already been doing great. So I don't think it's going to stop if President Trump is reelected. But we also know if we have a President Biden, there's going to be a lot of efforts really focused more so in that area. So I still like it. It's pulling back kind of heavily on some of those stocks, but it's still very healthy.
Did you watch the Apple release of its new phone, the 12, this week?
I did not watch, and I am an Apple girl. I have everything that's Apple, but I didn't watch. You know, honestly, I've never watched one of them. I just get the, you know, I read what happened. And honestly, I haven't read what happened.
Well, it just, when you're mentioning telecommunications and services and 5G, when I watched that video, it just had me really excited. And I was looking at my wife and I'm like, why did we get the 11 last year?
I know, right?
So,
amen. Amen.
we'll see what happens here for Christmas for each other. I don't know.
Sure. But I, you know, that area is looking really interesting. I've got, I like Spotify there. It had a big day on Monday, I believe, or Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday had a big, big day. It pulled way back yesterday, which was good. I thought it made a much better entry on it, but I still like Spotify. That's in the communication services area. A previous pick was Snap. I still think Snap looks good. It's, you know, it's starting to consolidate above what was overhead resistance. That one still looks good. So in the comm services, those are some of the areas I'm looking at. But, you know, I have to wonder about Netflix, though. It's one of those big names, and it is pulling back. And a lot of times, of course, it's going to take the industry or the sector with it sometimes with those big, large caps. But I don't know. I am liking some of those other names that I mentioned.
Let's shift here to kind of fixed income. Taking a look, you know, it's very interesting with utilities doing so well. while interest rates had moved down here in the month of September, maybe coming back a little bit here in the most recent days. Looking at long-term treasuries, they've rallied off their significant support in an ongoing broad decline. Where do you think bonds are headed at this point over the medium term?
Well, I'm looking at my chart for TLT, which is the one that I follow daily in the Decision Point Alert, and I write about a lot. And I'll have to say, for a while, there hasn't been much to write about as far as TLT. Really mostly sideways movement. Of course, then we got that breakdown. You know, it's bounced off of the 200-day EMA. The only issue I have with it right now is it's stuck under the 20 and 50-day EMAs. It's really struggling with overhead resistance. And that was the problem back in September. Just really couldn't break above that. But I have to say, I mean, the chart is starting to line up and look better. If we can get that breakout above those moving averages, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape here. It's struggling right now. It really is struggling, but momentum is certainly starting to go its way. I'm going to go look at my chart, but I think the RSI has now started, is positive on it as well. Yes, the RSI just moved positive. It's at 50.02, but hey, it's positive. I like the look of TLT. Full disclosure, I do own it. It's just one of my long-term holds. I'm liking the action that's happening right now. I think it's going to be interesting. Gold is that other area of interest too.
Yes, I'd like to talk about gold. But if long-term treasuries rally above that level that you're watching, could that coincide also with the stock market rolling over?
Well, certainly. I mean, there's a lot of times gold is that other area, right? Like we were just getting ready to talk about, that you get a lot of people in there. I think that Treasury certainly, you know, I'm looking at what happened back, you know, what happened to them back in March, you know, when the market collapsed. So did they. You know, I don't think that they're just, you know, what somebody just told me, a lead pipe cinch. That was, I was given that term. I hadn't heard that in a very long time. At this point, you know, really, it just seems like it's mostly sideways. I mean, I could see it getting back up to the top of the trading range for TLT. That's looks like at about 172. I mean, that would certainly be a nice little gain there, but I just don't see any giant breakouts here. And I feel that even bonds, well, at least TLT, are still somewhat subject to what's going on with the market in general. And I don't like it. I don't like what's lining up here with the market. I really don't. I hope I'm wrong. I really do.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, you wanted to head into gold. Let's do it. A lot of our listeners love gold and silver, and it's been a successful commodity year for the metals. Can you tell us your thoughts on gold? Do you like it? Are you buying, acquiring, accumulating, or going through some distribution?
Well, with gold, I am holding at this point. It looks like it's getting ready to head back down and test where it was last month. It looks like about 1850 is what I'm expecting, at least a move down there. At that point, I probably would start to accumulate a little bit more. We're in it's a falling wedge pattern on gold. And falling wedges are bullish, and they suggest a breakout coming. And we know that if the market does start to do poorly, this area just always tends to do well in a market downturn. And honestly, it's been doing well, it's been going up with the market. You know, I know I'm really liking my gold holdings right now in my account, but I don't think I'd be accumulating. And again, gold is one of those kind of buy and holds for me, but I would be considering, you know, more maybe adding to that position if we can get down to that 1850 and hold it, because then I'd be looking for that move to really break out of that bullish wedge. I mean, we've got really great momentum that's starting to pick up. I don't have a buy signal just yet. And the RSI is still negative, but it really is right around that net neutral zero at 50. So, you know, it's not doing its thing just yet. But I'm expecting to pull back just a little bit more, and then it's going to break out of that wedge. I mean, that's what I'm looking at. You've got a lot of... for sentiment on gold, we follow the premium and discount of the closed and fund of the physical gold trust. And right now, it's a lot of discounts are coming in. And that means that people are bearish on gold. And, you know, with sentiment being contrarian, I like to see high discounts like that, because generally those precede those nice runs to the upside. So we're seeing a lot of the discounts are still there. So I think that sentiment is bearish enough that will help. And, you know, if gold starts to make its move, I would be looking at the gold miners as well.
It's interesting. I haven't looked at that indicator in a long time, but I remember during the gold bull market where every time these ETFs were trading at a premium, we'd get a stock issuance and the ETFs would plunge.
Exactly.
I don't miss those days. But Aaron, copper has been another interesting metal. My brother wrote a piece on it early this year about China replenishing its stockpiles, inventories at historic lows. What do your charts tell you about this commodity?
Well, copper, it's one that I don't normally follow, but I have to say I'm going to look at this chart so I can get an idea. Looking at just the longer term weekly chart, I think copper looks great. I mean, the only issue is I can see that momentum is, for my indicator, the price momentum oscillator, it's on the overbought side. It's starting to kind of move a little sideways, but that RSI is still very strong. It's not overbought. Looking at the OBV, between 2019 and the beginning, and the bear market low, between those periods of time, even though the price lows were really going down quickly, you had the on-balance volume rising bottoms. You've had rising bottoms now on copper since mid-2019 on the OBV. So, you know, there's still the interest there. It's a really nice breakout. It's holding above, some support right now. So I have to say, I think in a longer term picture, it looks pretty good. Shorter term, we're getting ready. It looks like we've got a buy signal that just happened on my price momentum oscillator. RSI is positive. It's struggling with that overhead resistance from last month, but it really hasn't, you know, completely collapsed or anything when I look at the copper continuous contract. So
before we finish, is there anything else you'd like to highlight in the market right now that I haven't mentioned?
Well, I think that one is the dollar. I was looking at the UUP chart this morning, and, you know, we've got a nice big gap up, at least for UUP on the dollar. It follows the dollar, of course, the ETF. And I am really surprised. So I've been watching a cup and handle pattern on UUP. And it started to develop it. Well, when I started to notice it, of course, it was in September, late September. And then we had that pullback and it made like this perfect declining trend channel handle. And today with that gap up, it's broken above the handle. And of course, a cup and handle being a bullish pattern, I really like the look of the dollar right now. And that's another reason why I'm kind of expecting that pullback to continue
in gold,
yeah. Just because, you know, it obviously applies pressure to gold. It's valued in the dollar. So seeing that breakout though, on that cup and handle, I think the dollar is going to be very interesting.
And possibly give you that buying opportunity you mentioned in gold, like you said.
Absolutely. That's what I'm always looking for, those pullbacks. You know, everybody's so upset when the market pulls back and such. But, you know, if I've done like I do, get rid of some of these positions, you get that pullback and that offers such great opportunity.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on the show this week. What's the best place for listeners to learn more about your work and subscribe?
DecisionPoint.com. And again, I'm Aaron Swenlin. I work with my father, Carl Swenlin. Some of you guys may know them. If you go to our website, though, decisionpoint.com, of course, you can learn about our DP Alert and the DP Diamonds report that I do. But also, if you sign up on our free email list, which is right on that homepage, I'll give you the information. I hold a free Decision Point trading room every Monday for 1 hour from 9 a.m. Pacific to 10. And I take symbol requests, I go through a market review and answer questions, very interactive, and show entries and exits during the trading day. You know, look at 5-minute bar charts and candlestick charts. So anyway, it's a free free 1 hour once a week on Mondays. So just go to decisionpoint.com. If you sign up for our free email list, I will send you the information for this coming Mondays.
Well, Aaron, again, thank you for coming on the show, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Take care.
Woody, last time we spoke with you, it was a couple of months after COVID had broken out, and you discussed how COVID is leading to the creation of a large-scale global health surveillance system similar to what we saw after 9/11. If you don't mind, let's start there as a way of framing today's conversation.
So on September 17th, 2001, we made the case that a new global security industry was being created. First, the screening would be for weapons and explosives, become standard at airports, and then ultimately virtually all public venues would see some type of screening. So we think the COVID-19 pandemic is a major inflection point for this health tech surveillance. And so really going forward, the world will never be the same post-COVID-19. In fact, Dr. Fauci recently published a study in the journal Cell that argued that we've entered this pandemic era.
If you want to listen to this full interview, in addition to our three other interviews that we air each week with some of the best book authors, industry experts, and leading investment strategists from around the globe, go to financialsense.com and click the subscribe button.
Are you getting closer to retirement? Do you worry about what retirement will look like? Financial Sense Wealth Management can help put your mind at ease. Our advisors can help customize an individual retirement plan that fits your needs and helps you get on the right track to achieving your retirement goals. We'll show you how to get the most out of your Social Security benefits, make the right decisions on Medicare, reduce taxes, and increase your return on investments so you can relax and enjoy your retirement years. Don't leave your retirement up to chance. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management today at 888-486-3939 or email us at grow@financialsense.com.
Chris Poplava, Chief Investment Officer for Financial Sense Wealth Management, joins us on today's edition of Smart Macro. And Chris, I was just watching your weekly investment meeting minutes from this week. We posted on our website. And you talked about how the global economic recovery continues. So can you give our listeners an update on where things stand on that front?
We usually talk about the U.S. I kind of want to start looking outside the U.S. first and looking at the recovery globally. And when we look at Eurozone retail sales, one of the things that might surprise people is that the year-over-year growth rate in Eurozone retail sales reached 3.7% last month. And that is way above the growth rate pre-COVID. And it's actually one of the highest growth rates in retail sales in Europe since early 2018. So a definite clear recovery in Europe as fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus has kind of put more money into consumers' pockets to spend. And we've also seen a resurgence in retail spending here in the U.S. And we just got retail sales for the month of September, which were well above expectations and show that consumers continue to spend. And what we're finding is that with a lot of services curtailed in terms of whether it's hair salons or whatever it may be, whatever type of service it is, we see goods spending in the U.S. has reached a new all-time high. So we definitely have people buying durables like TVs, appliances, things of the sort. We're hitting record high levels there. The auto industry is doing really well. Used cars, even new car sales are starting to recover. And, you know, we don't have the third quarter GDP out yet, but based on the Fed's own weekly leading index, it looks like we're going to see a significant improvement in year-over-year GDP growth, where it reached in the second quarter -9%. Where based on the Fed's model, we're likely to see that improve to -5% in the third quarter. So, you know, pretty significant improvement from where we were earlier this year. Now, key question mark, you know, and this will really dictate how things shape going forward, is the, you know, going into the flu season, the 2021 flu season, people are, you know, weather gets colder, people are more indoors. If we start to see a significant surge in COVID cases, that causes more lockdowns and decrease in mobility. Now, one of the things that's nice is the Dallas Fed has a mobility and engagement trend tracker. And we can see this both at the state level and national level. And so far, you know, the mobility pretty much bottomed in mid-April and it improved all the way into June. And we've more or less gone sideways over the last 3 to 4 months. So even with COVID cases starting to pick up, the encouraging thing is we're not seeing a decrease in mobility. So that will be a real key factor to watch going forward to see if we do see decreased mobility, which likely means less consumer spending in a slower economy.
Do you think that plateau in mobility trends has to do with the fact that a large number of people are actually working from home? And it seems that that's probably going to remain with us. The economy has just been irrevocably changed. Do you think that is playing a role in mobility trends, that it has less to do necessarily now with COVID itself?
That's a good point. You know, clearly more people are working from home, but what we're not seeing is a pickup in service spending. So even though you may be working from home, you still need to get your hair cut and you still need to go to, you know, maybe the dry cleaner or some other type of service. So, you know, we're not seeing a full recovery yet in service spending by the consumer. So that will be something real key to watch, is that recovery in service spending could really begin to stall if we start to see more lockdowns. I think really even more than looking at consumer mobility, the thing we really want to keep an eye on are small businesses and small business revenue. In perfect alignment with that stalling in consumer mobility is the percent change in small business revenue, which has effectively stalled since June and still is roughly around 23% below pre-COVID levels. So if we do start to see more lockdowns and restrictions in place, we're likely to see small businesses close and small business revenue decline. So we really have stalled. And I think, again, part of this is the stimulus plus the, you know, starting to see pickups in COVID cases. So it'll be, again, like I said, really interesting to see how we move along with the vaccine, as well as how the outbreak develops in the coming weeks and months.
So would you say on balance, things are positive with those caveats?
I would. Everything is about change on the margin. Are we better than last week or worse? And when you look at the weekly data and the monthly data, we continue to see improvement off the March lows. And I didn't mention China, but recently China's industrial production hit a new high, so a post-COVID high. So, you know, clearly there's a lot of recovery, but there's also some pain. You know, as I mentioned, service spending in the U.S. still has not reached a new high yet. So, but things are improving, you know, but I think one of the things that we are starting to see also is beginning to see a pickup in cases. If you look at new confirmed cases in Europe, a lot of countries in Europe are seeing a higher level of active new cases than they did in the first wave in the spring of this year. So what is encouraging, though, is even though we are seeing new daily case growth highs, we're not seeing the same commensurate pickup in deaths like we did earlier this year. So I think we're kind of learning how to handle the outbreak with treatment and so forth. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, continual increase in cases doesn't quite lead to a significant increase in deaths going forward.
Okay, Chris. So I guess, you know, we've covered the economic front here. Global economic recovery continues. Positives currently outweigh the negatives. Big caveat is just the surge that we see infections. Let's pivot over to the markets and your market outlook. You did talk quite a bit about improving market breadth in the credit markets, a number of things that feature prominently in your market outlook. Would you mind sharing some of those thoughts with our listeners today?
Absolutely. And you always want to see the markets and economy in harmony, you know, singing the same song. And that's what I'm seeing. So when, you know, as I mentioned, we've had sequential improvement in the economic data since March and April. We've also seen sequential improvement in the financial markets. If you look at investment grade credit default swaps, or if you look at high yield credit default swaps, all of these are showing improvement and confirming the market rally. And additionally, when we look at commodities, which are often linked to economic activity, if we look at copper prices have surged way above pre-COVID levels. They're now getting close to their highs that they saw in 2018. And even if you look at iron ore spot prices, those are reaching 4- and 5-year highs. So economically sensitive commodities like copper and iron are surging, which does tend to support the notion of an improving global economy. We do have some struggling in oil, though. And I think that is just a supply-demand issue where we just have an abundance of supply, where oil is just, you know, struggled to recoup the loss that we saw since the beginning of the year. But oil, if we see the oil begin to break out, that would even further support the notion that the global economy is definitely on the mend.
So, Chris, as we've seen this bull market continue from the March bottoms, and we can see a near-term bottom on September 24th, and the market has rallied about 9 to 10% since then, which is interesting in the face of all of this talk about election uncertainty and how that would lead to a lot of volatility. You know, the market has seemed to be fairly resilient. What are you seeing under the hood when you look at various sectors and just how broad-based this rally is?
One of the things I like to look at is breadth. And, you know, it's never a healthy market in which you have only a handful of stocks leading the market higher. And we certainly have, you know, the highlight or spotlight on the big tech companies. But one of the things I'm looking for is to see that this rally is broad-based, that it's not just one sector that's leading the charge. And one of the ways I do that is looking at the internal momentum of the market. And that's, I do that by looking at the monthly MACD buy signals for the S&P 1500. So essentially what I'm looking at is long-term monthly momentum in the market, and I'm looking at small, medium, and large companies, so 1,500 stocks altogether. And I want to see a pickup in buy signals. So usually when you have a long-term buy signal, like a monthly MACD, it takes a lot of deterioration to turn that into a sell. So it's kind of like Newton's first law of motion. An object in motion tends to stay in motion unless acted upon by another force. And when we look at the market, we saw a low of roughly only, I would say, about 15% of the market had a long-term monthly MACD buy signal on it. But we've seen a real pickup in the last 2 months here, where we've gone from, in May, around 25% had long-term buy signals, to nearly 50%. And it's been a straight vertical rise in the last 2 months. So that is very encouraging. This is kind of the action that we saw coming out of the mini bear market in the fourth quarter of 2018. When we got into the February-March period of 2019, I saw the same issue same development, where we saw a big spike in MACD buy signals, which further supported market strength in the months ahead. And also we saw this in the spring of 2016, after that very volatile period where in 2015, China devalued its currency and we had financial markets in turmoil. In the spring of 2016, I saw again a surge in MACD buy signals, which told me that we were going to come out of that downturn and enter into a strong bull market, which we did. Late 16 to 17 was a strong move in the market. And even the second half of last year, we saw a pretty big surge in the stock market as MACD buy signals began to pick up pace. So that is encouraging. You know, I would be very concerned if we only saw a handful of long-term buy signals in the S&P 1500 while the index itself continued to hit new highs. But I'm not seeing that. And further, when we look at S&P 500, another measure that I look at is 52-week highs and lows. And one of the concerning things is when you start to see the market head higher and the number of 52-week highs begin to contract or diverge from the market. And we saw that in February. If you look at the last year, the high for 52-week new highs in the market was around 22% of members hitting new highs in January. But when we hit a new high in the market in February, we only had around 10 to 15% of stocks hitting a new high. So there's some clear weakening where the market was being led higher by fewer and fewer stocks. But when we look at the current situation, right now we are seeing a continual pickup and surge in 52-week highs, which is confirming the strength of the market versus showing deterioration. So that is very encouraging to me. And then lastly, you know, one of the other ways to kind of look at breadth is advanced decline lines. These are simply just looking at the number of stocks that advanced on the day less those that declined, and then adding that number cumulatively. And when we look at the S&P Mid-Cap 400, and we look at the S&P 500 Large Cap Index, we have a new all-time high in their advanced decline lines. And when we look at the S&P 600, so that's small cap stocks, the index put a high in 2018, a lower high earlier this year. And so it's been essentially in a bear market since 2018, and it has not recovered to a new high. However, beneath the hood, we're almost seeing a new high in the advanced decline line. So there's plenty of stocks within the index itself that are starting to move forward and participate. So this is an encouraging sign that does tend to point towards further strength ahead if we continue to see the market broadening out and not just be led by the tech sector.
Okay, so the global economic recovery, it continues. Mobility and consumer trends, they're moving in the right direction. Credit markets are confirming the market move higher. Commodities are confirming the global recovery. As you said, economically sensitive commodities like copper and iron are showing that the recovery has some pretty firm footing in it. At least that's the signal coming from Dr. Copper, and I don't know if we can call it Dr. Iron, but iron ore. And we see improving market breadth. So that indicates that the market rally is broadening out. Small and mid-cap stock breadth near a breakout, as you said. So all of these are pretty positive items that we're looking at. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people are obviously thinking about what's going to happen with the U.S. elections. What's the outcome going to be? The polls are very one-sided, as usual, at least as we saw with the last election, towards against Trump. And you know, it's basically almost completely saying that Biden is going to win. But some people are saying that when you look at the stock market, that's saying a very different picture. We've had people air both sides or both views in terms of looking at the historical research on this. One person that we had on is Professor Helmut Norpeth at Stony Brook University. He developed what's called the primary model, which is giving an over 90% landslide electoral college win, not a popular vote, but an electoral college win for Trump. And that has been very, very accurate in predicting 25 of the last 27 elections going back to the early 1900s. That's probably the most accurate model I am aware of, and that's predicting a Trump win. And there's also some research out there that says that whenever the largest U.S. stocks have risen 3 months prior to a presidential election, that the incumbent party, that's the party controlling the White House, won 90% of the time. So the polls are saying one thing. What are your thoughts in terms of some of the data and indicators that you're looking at?
I think probably the biggest concern for the market would be a contested election. And so if the election is close, or let's say Trump loses by a small margin, then there's the chance that he may contest the election and drag this out into the end of the year. And that creates uncertainty, which the market abhors. So one of the things I noted was that after the first presidential debate, the predicted odds that Joe Biden's going to win the presidency over Trump surged. And with it, we saw a pickup in the S&P. And I think the reason for that is if the win by Joe Biden this year, if he wins by a large margin, there's less likelihood that Trump will contest it. So as his lead over Trump widens, I've seen the stock market rally. And interestingly, that's also impacted the bond market. So when you look at the spread of that Biden has over Trump, as that rises, so too have U.S. Treasury yields, long-term, so 10-year Treasury yields. And I think the thinking behind that is if we do see a blue sweep this November, that could mean even higher deficit spending than under a Trump presidency. And so the greater the level of debt spending, obviously it's going to put strain on bond yields and the dollar. And so we could, you know, definitely see some interesting movements ahead. Now, if Trump somehow, like he did in 2016, pulls it out, I think the concern would be is that there might be less stimulus under Trump than under a Biden presidency. So the market might, you know, discount that a little bit. And you also might see 10-year Treasury yields fall, as it's perceived that there's going to be less stimulus than under a Biden presidency. So it will be really interesting to see how things play out. I think what we don't want to see is a very, very close election where, you know, either side could try to contest the election. So I think it would be healthy if Biden wins by a large margin, or if Trump can win the Electoral College by a large margin. That really does lessen the odds of a contested election. And I don't think anyone really wants to see that. So I think that would be the kind of worst case scenario, is that we have a very, very close split election, which we do see get dragged out in the months ahead, even going further into the end of the year. But ideally, we want to see a decisive win by either party. I think the market can handle either one. But if we do have a contested election, I think we're going to see a fair amount of volatility ahead.
Well, Chris, I would strongly agree with you there. I don't think any of us want to see that type of situation with a contested election or any of the other types of fallout that would come from that. That being said, looking past the elections, you know, we're getting closer to 2021. We're only a couple months, less than a month and a half away. That's amazing now. What are you looking at when it comes to 2021, past the elections, past some of that uncertainty? Do you see this recovery still being sustainable? Any other longer term thoughts that you can share with us?
That's a good point. You know, I think sometimes we get so fixated on the short term that we tend to fixate on that noise, which is always going to be louder than the long term focus. And going into 21, I am bullish. I think, you know, there's a high likelihood that the stocks will be higher next year compared to where they are right now. And the reason for that is we have a lot of positives to think about. We know regardless of who's going to be ends up in the White House in November, we're still going to get some kind of fiscal stimulus. There's no more, you know, posturing ahead of the election. I think we're going to come together. We have too many people who need stimulus for politicians to play games. I think we're definitely going to get some kind of a fiscal package. It's just, you know, a question of the size. But I think that's coming. And I think we'll have even more stimulus next year if we see the economy still struggling. And we have plenty of monetary stimulus that the Fed has at its disposal. But there's other, you know, high probability events happening next year. We've got over more than 150 vaccines in development right now across the globe. I mean, the likelihood that we wouldn't have one that's effective next year, to me, appears pretty low given we have so many candidates that are being worked with.
You said that's 150?
That is 150 globally. You know, we know of a couple of high-profile ones, either by Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and others, but there's over 150 right now globally. So again, it's very likely that we're going to have some kind of vaccine. And as we begin to get herd immunity, we're going to probably see less lockdowns and the economy's opening up, which to me, I think is going to really open up pent-up demand by the consumer, particularly the U.S. consumer. One of the things that we saw this recession, which is very atypical, was that consumer incomes, disposable personal income, surged. So much so that in March and April, we saw the U.S. savings rate exceed 30% for the first time in history, at least as far back as we have data, nearly reaching 35%. And even looking at August data, the savings rate was 14% in the U.S., and that's, you know, the highest since the early to mid-70s. And when you look at bank deposits, you know, we saw over, I think, $2.5 trillion surge in bank deposits at commercial banks by U.S. households. So there is a lot of pent-up savings, a lot there I think could be capitalized and tapped on as we go into 21 and the economy reopens. And I think we're going to continue to see that recovery play out. So I think it's really important not to fixate too much on the noise near term, because I do think the economy will recover, even if we have a stumbling block here in the next couple of months with a pickup in COVID and a lack of fiscal stimulus. You know, looking a year out, I do think the economy is going to be continuing to be on the mend. And I think stocks will be higher based on all the stimulus that is in the works and the likelihood of a vaccine.
Well, Chris, as we close, would you mind telling our listeners some of the various services that we provide here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, either for individual investors, institutions, corporations, and the like?
Sure. We provide a whole host of financial services. We provide financial planning, wealth management. We also do 401k servicing, consulting, and we also assist corporations in managing their cash balance, particularly with interest rates at 0%.
If any of our listeners would like to get in touch with our financial advisors, what would be the best way to do so?
They can give us a call at 888-486-3939.
Chris, it was a pleasure speaking with you again on Smart Macro. We look forward to speaking with you in another 2 weeks.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.